Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Beams List, a podcast that celebrates the art of conversation with your host, Dean Latticer.
Thank you, George, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the Dean's List. I am, in fact, your host, Dean Latticer, and I am, in fact, excited about today's broadcast. A dear friend has consented to join us, somebody who I enjoy talking to anyhow, so why don't I let you eavesdrop? And the fact that he is a master at his craft, all the better. National sales trainer, keynote speaker, award-winning sales coach, Don Zavis is my guest today. He last joined us in July of 2013 and has consented to return visit. He's an accomplished executive with a successful history of taking private and public organizations to new levels of sales and profitability. He's got an outstanding record of assisting the highest level of sales achievers, training them to their fullest potential, and constantly coaching them to perform in the top 10% of their industries. He also has this ability to create a sales organization across the scope of an organization while fostering the environment for mutual achievement and rewards. And the man is just walks his talk. And since it's been a while since he joined us, I thought, boy, it's overdue. So let's give a warm On the Dean's List welcome to my buddy Don Zavis. Good morning, John. Don, thank you for joining.
Thanks. Oh, no, it's my pleasure. As I was mentioned in the show prep previously, I'm actually in Tucson, Arizona right now, but interestingly enough, sporting a cold. So if it sounds kind of nasally, hopefully that's not going to be too off-putting.
You'll be fine. Early to bed, early rise, and decongest.
Absolutely, no. My wife was kind enough to give me a whole battery of medicines and medications, and so hopefully that's going to kick in here sometime during the show. I also wanted to mention, by the way, it's interesting that the intro that you had done, the little blurb, was actually, I hired a professional writer to do that. And interestingly enough, that single paragraph was distilled down from three paragraphs of potential intro information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I always find it wonderful because I tell people it's always, you know, better to kind of hone down from where you are. But you should have, you know, your own, for lack of a better word, shameless plug. Mm-hmm. You know, it's some way to communicate what you do and how you do it would set you apart from the rest of the world, right? So anytime I hear that on the background, I always try to set myself on the side and go, wow, that guy sounds really good. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. So I kiddingly say that.
And I think that's an interesting positioning, and we'll jump up on that because that's what a lot of sales and marketing is positioning in one's mind. And that ability to engage people that you are the expert or that you are the gateway to achieve their goals, their objectives, or have the things that they want or desire. I once heard it said that people don't like salespeople, but people like to buy things, so somebody has to facilitate the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. The phraseology that we use in coaching and training is that no one likes to be sold, but everyone likes to buy. Mm-hmm. And as a companion piece to that, that really the best thing for a client or a customer is a well-trained, capable, and educated salesperson. You know, we are the living brochure. We're the living website. We're the ultimate search tool. So, you know, again, the best thing for a client or a prospect is a well-trained, capable, and educated salesperson, without question.
Tell me, what are your clients coming to you with these days? Tell me the things that they're saying, because, again, sales evolves over time. But where are you helping people? Where's your sales clients and your corporate clients' pains, and what sort of things are they looking for you to help get their teams directed on?
That's a great question. Fear and dissatisfaction. You know, if I had to distill those two down, they run neck and neck. Sometimes fear, sometimes dissatisfaction. But, you know, it's interesting that people will go from being afraid or being concerned. They've got dwindling sales. They've got a mediocre sales force. And, you know, it manifests itself first in fear. They're not able to pay their bills. They can't reach the goals that are either set for them or the ones that they set themselves. And interestingly enough, then that fear kind of manifests itself in a level of dissatisfaction. There's a perception of, you know, where it is right now comparative to where it could be. And that's really the focus, or the, I hate to use the word wedge point because that's such a negative connotation, but that's how we work our way into most of the sales relationships that we have. And for those that are taking notes on the call, again, it's hard for me not to be a sales trainer or sales coach, but I would encourage you to write these things down. You know, in order for someone to marry me, so to speak, right, buy my product, buy my service, they have to psychologically divorce wherever they are right now. And the phraseology that I like to use with anyone that I meet with, you know, after asking them ultimately how they hope I can help them, is to really say, you know, and again, if you're thinking about this in a selling situation, I always like to know, first of all, you know, how are you hoping I can help you? That's number one. And what is your level of dissatisfaction? You know, what's happening that you're not happy with? Or ultimately, what's not happening that you're not happy with? And, you know, if you're pleased with the results, and this is the note-taking opportunity for those that are taking notes, write down this line. You don't even really have to be smart or change it, you know. Because, again, it talks about that level of dissatisfaction and how are you hoping that ultimately we can help you.
I think one of the things that people realize is that sometimes it's a little late. They've maybe missed a couple of months or quarters. I think change mm-hmm. has got to be an ongoing thing. My concern is always, you know, you can't go fix something where it's too far broken. So when's the best time for you to talk to somebody and also help us to understand, because people are at different levels. You've got people who've been there maybe less than 6 months, so you've got newbies. You've got people mm-hmm. who have been there a while and they're very comfortable and maybe in an account manager or a sales professional role. And then you have sales is oftentimes a feeding, is a segue into management, oftentimes sales managers or, you know, general managers or stuff have done it more mm-hmm. than a tour of duty in the sales process. So let's take a little of these and get there before somebody's, you're on a 30-day performance plan or something. Let's help people today and do some things that are impactful.
Well, I think, let me start with this phrase, because I think it might help hone it down. You know, if you're happy with the results that you're getting from something you're doing, keep doing it. So if you're happy with the results you're getting from your sales campaign, your marketing, your advertising, and inclusive of everything in life, if you're happy with the results you're getting, you know, keep doing it. You know, you don't need to change. If you're getting the results you want, keep doing it. If you're not happy with the results, and frequently I say that, you know, and I'm not saying I'm the answer at this point in time, but ultimately what is it that you're going to change? What are you going to do today that was different than yesterday? And the adage that I like to use is, the dollar that I do not get today, I don't necessarily get to tomorrow. There may not be that opportunity to get back. So I generally always say the present. Anytime anybody asks me about when, the answer is always the same. Now, I can't change the past. There's no guarantee of it. Well, my only influence that I legitimately have is over the behaviors that I have today. And there's a great learning tool, a great illustration that's in the form of a little story, but I'll share it with you and try to keep it brief. You know, it's interesting. I'm a pretty sociable guy, and, you know, I'm the first guy to put my hand out, "Hi, I'm Don Zavis." And the health club that I used to attend back in Michigan, actually at the Southfield Town Center, it's a shameless plug for the Peter Nielsen facility when I had my offices in the Southfield Town Center. And what I found was that, you know, I would be there at 5 o'clock in the morning pretty faithfully through the course of the week. And I would find that, you know, generally the first week of January, second week of January, and there would be dozens and dozens and dozens of new faces. And at that, again, being the sociable person that I am, I invested a lot of time reaching out to the new people and, you know, making suggestions, helping them on workout routines that may not be necessarily as comfortable in the gym as I was at that time. And it was interesting. And what I found was that, you know, the next month or the beginning of February, the vast majority of those people weren't even there anymore. So about maybe 10 years ago, I decided that, you know, unless I saw you there for at least 1 month, other than a cursory hello or a cursory conversation or a smile, I wasn't really going to invest a lot in developing the relationship because, again, you know, everyone, you know, there's one January 1st. But the reality is that there's only one March 2nd. So the same focus that people have, they like to chronologically identify to the beginning of the year. There's something very cathartic about the concept of starting over. And when we work with behavioral training approaches, that's one of the things we talk about is that you're not missing anything. You have probably all the fingers likely and all the tools that you need to be successful. But it always revolves around today. Everything is today. There's no guarantee of a tomorrow. And we have no influence on yesterday. We can only do things today. So I apologize. I kind of went a long way to make a point. I think it's an important point to make that
so often I think people benchmark a calendar event or some sort of, I'll change when this happens. I'll be a better salesperson when I can get a better close or when I can do this, that, or the other thing. And I think I hear you saying is just the opposite. Become a better salesman so you can have or be a better sales professional so you can be in a space where you can actually have the changes you seek.
Sure. And everything is about commitment, whether it's developing an exercise program or weight loss desires, whatever ultimately you have, it's all a level of commitment. What are you willing to do? What is the level of dissatisfaction? Is the pain of being overweight more than the pain of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning 5 days a week? Well, to some people it is. To some people, unfortunately, it's not. To some people, they don't see that level of dissatisfaction. And ultimately, again, if you're pleased with the results you're getting, doing whatever it is that you're doing, I encourage my clients to keep doing it.
Okay, well, one of the things that's happened, I think, in sales is the change, the advent in technology. And I know I look back from my first sales job back in the 80s when I was post-college. You could definitely get a decision maker on the phone. You might have a great prospect. There might be a gatekeeper you needed to get around.
Sure.
But nowadays, with voicemail hell, with people mobile all the time, all you need to go is to your neighborhood coffee shop, and you see all these open laptops and people on their phones, so there's not the brick-and-mortar places that you can meet up with people. Help us to continue to evolve on this. How do we kill the next killer app?
I think unfortunately technology is here to stay, and I say that kind of kiddingly because I am historically a very non-tech type of person, but I do believe that it's here to stay and we've got to tolerate it. I think what ends up happening is that in a lot of sales situations, it kind of creates the perception that it's providing a level of benefit that it doesn't. I'll give you a great example. I'm doing a session, this was a month ago, and it was a three-day session. And we had some skills that they were going to work with overnight and the following morning for some of the things that came out of the session content. And I had one of the session attendees come up to me at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're having the continental breakfast. And he said, "Don, you'd be so proud of me." And, of course, when somebody says that, I set down my coffee and my breakfast, and I gave my undivided attention. And I said, "Really? How so?" He goes, "Because I made 50 calls, or excuse me, I sent out 50 emails this morning." Now, we were obviously in an environment where he was committed to being there. But I said, had you said that to me just in the course of the normal world, my answer would have been, "Okay, well, when do you want to talk about that problem?" And he seemed very confused with my answer. And in the course of conversation, what I shared with him is that, I would have much preferred you to take those 50 emails and the same time it took you to generate the 50 emails, sit down and have breakfast with a client that's important to you. Sit down with a prospect that you hold a good opportunity. Again, that email is only utilized, or I only recommend utilizing it, when a telephone or in a perfect world, a face-to-face conversation is unavailable. The technology unto itself, you can't email, you can't text, you can't, blog, you can't website, you can't, do anything to guarantee your success. Professional selling is still a face-to-face, eye-to-eye business, and that will never change. That's the reason why would President Obama, why would he have a long, lengthy, and detailed email exchange with Vladimir Putin that didn't require either of them to get on a train, to get on a plane and sit face-to-face? Well, it's the same thing in our world. this is a face-to-face, belly-to-belly, eye-to-eye business. That's never going to change. And the more times you try to technologize it, the least effective you're going to be. You know, we are herd animals. You know, you look at the millions of years of DNA and evolution that kind of brought us to today, and we're herd animals. We seek out the interpersonal contact that the pack mentality provides. That's why, if you think about it, you know, most of the people that go to Starbucks or to Einstein's or Brew Group Bagels, any one of the coffee shops you find throughout the world, and whip open their laptop, every single one of those people likely has internet access from wherever they live. They could do the exact same thing, probably quieter and certainly more efficiently in a lot of cases than going to a Starbucks or, you know, a library or something like that. But again, we seek out our own kind. You know, we thrive in an environment of socialization. So, and that phenomenon really, you know, created this whole, you know, business coffee shop mentality world.
One of the things I think that's also changed dramatically is that people used to hang out their shingles, a lawyer or an accountant or other business professionals, and they, you know, you'd say, okay, you're the lawyer, okay, you're the specialist in probate, or you're the specialist in family law, or whatever.
Right.
Nowadays, because there's a lot of people in those opportunities, plus, you know, a lot of density of opportunities, help us to help those people to sell, because oftentimes, I know as a writer and a marketer, I have to sell my services and then fulfill my services. So I totally empathize with a lot of those people that they have to go out and sell and then perform.
Sure.
So help us to keep those people in alignment too.
Well, it's the concept that you eat what you kill. And if you're in a situation where you self-perform, which means that, you know, you're kind of the jack of all trades. You know, you're the salesperson, you're the talent, you're the content, you're, you know, the accounts payable person, you're the accounts receivable person, you're the human rights, HR specialist. Yeah, you know, you kind of wear every protective possible role that comes down the pike. I think what ultimately happens is you need to create a machine, and this has been certainly one of our focuses for 2016. You need to create a machine that is effective and efficient. It has it is scalable. It has a very low cost of delivery, but has a very high perceived value to your client base. In the process of creating that machine, all of the mechanisms that you use to drive attention to yourself effectively is funneled into the machine. And let me give you an illustration.
Give us an example. It's a big high-picture concept.
Well, how about this conference call? It's a perfect example.
Okay.
Right? Now, you are a very capable, very qualified writer. I've seen your work. We've worked together. So your reputation is impeccable. But these conference calls gives you a venue to gain interest, to have people kind of look at you. And there's an adage that we talk about in coaching and training that says, if you want someone to look at you, you've got to do something worth looking at. If you want someone to listen to you, you've got to do something worth listening to. This conference call, I believe, is your way of telling the world, you know, I've got something worth listening to, and here it is. Here's how we're going to move forward. Here's the value that ultimately brings. But when we talk about creation of the machine, you know, I love to say that the U.S. military and McDonald's, you know, can take the 18-year-old kids that can't even make their bed, and they can feed and defend the nation. And they do that by a process. So for example, hypothetically, I've got a client that's in skincare. And the first step of her machine is a conference call. It's about 30 minutes long. It's live, and it's once a week. And we created that specifically so that if she has someone who is interested in her product, her services, you know, if you think about the high-end picture, given the choice of having 50 separate meetings around 50 separate, 50 separate kitchen tables with 50 separate people, or having one meeting with 50 people all together, what would you choose?
Obviously, the economy, the effectiveness.
Absolutely. Sure, me too. So the first step in her machine is, instead of, you know, before she started with me, every time someone would raise their hand and show the slightest inkling of interest, her first inclination was, you know, run out, jump, you know, get in my car, run out there. And all too many times she would make that half-hour, 45-minute drive. She'd be sitting there at the table and thinking to herself, you know, what the hell am I doing here? And that could have easily been solved by a series of questions on the telephone. So the first step now in her machine is that anyone who is interested in her product or service, she offers them a complimentary conference call. And in that conference call, they talk about the history, they talk about the product, they talk about the cost, they can talk about reasonable expectations because it's a live conference call. They can talk about the chronological issues because she's in skincare and we're coming up into the, you know, into the sunbathing season, tanning season, things like that, you know. Again, so it can always be very, very timely, her message in her conference call. It also does a great diagnostic, and for those people that are taking notes, I want you to write this word down, do, D-O. The concept of a do in sales is a diagnostic that requires an activity that ultimately identifies the legitimacy of your prospect or client's interest. So, for example, you know, everyone will say, you know, I'm interested, I'm interested, I'm interested, I'm interested, I'm interested. And you give them whatever you want, the quote, whatever it is that they need, and then they go in the witness protection program. They don't answer your calls, they don't answer your emails, right? I mean, they just disappear from the face of the earth. Now, keep in mind, this is the same person that said they were interested. So that do is a sales diagnostic that essentially goes around the concept of never listen to what they say, only listen to what they do. Their actions speak louder than words. So when I give my client a do, some kind of small activity that will enable me to identify the legitimacy of their interest, and there are three types of dues. There are low-value dues, there are medium-value dues, and there are high-value dues. So, example, a low-value due would be someone listening to her half-hour conference call. Excuse me. There's no cost involved, right? You can do it from the comfort of your home or office. There is great content information that's going to be provided. But when she'll contact somebody back that says, oh, yeah, we're interested, we're interested, we're interested, we're interested, and that they had agreed to listen to the conference call, and she'll follow up with them the next day, even though the conference call is archived, so they could see it, and they'll hear something like this. Oh, God, I got so busy in soccer and the kids and blah, 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 blah. Now, that's true. Things happen. Life does encroach on the best of us. And so they talk again the next day. And there's the same thing. Oh, hey, you know, this happened. This didn't have a chance, didn't have a chance. So what we find is that the successful salespeople who only look at the do's, not what they say, what they do, actions speak louder than words. You know, again, you go back to your adolescent training with your parents. You know, mom used to say, you know, actions speak louder than words. So never listen to what they say, only listen to what they do. But the creation of a machine that clearly identifies that first step, that first activity, because if they tell you they're interested and they don't read your, you know, one-page email or come on to your, you know, 30-minute conference call, do something, you know, send you something that you know was necessary for you to be able to get started. Again, we don't listen to what they say, we only listen to what they do. Their actions speak louder than words.
Boy, I wanted to make sure that in the time left we also touch on something we had talked about. We had talked about whole person approach last time we caught up, and I know that that's important. That's mm-hmm. been one of your goals for 2016 here. In the time we have remaining, take 2 or 3 minutes and encourage mm-hmm. us, because I want to make sure we get that in before the bottom of the hour here.
Right. Well, we call that the Army of One. And if you think about the Army, the actual United States Armed Forces uses that Army of One concept that essentially says every soldier is an army of one. They have the same types of things. They have logistics and food service and sleep. I mean, they're, you know, they are the microcosm of the multi-million man fighting force that is provided to the United States gratefully. So the Army of One concept essentially says that if you start thinking of yourself first and you try to make a better you, by de facto, everyone who surrounds you will get better as well. So if you think of the idea, the rising tide raises all ships. And you'll hear me say in session that it's okay to be selfish. Not argumentative, but I want you to be selfish about you. We all have a certain amount of emotional intelligence. We have a certain amount of energy. We have a certain amount of drive, certain amount of... The illustration I love to use, and I actually use my Michigan illustration, is Justin Verlander. You know, Justin Verlander was an amazing... still is, certainly, but you know, an amazing pitcher. You know, I used to love to watch the mechanics of how a successful pitch was done, and you could watch the fluidity that happened along with it. And I would ask my classes, when I would use this illustration, I would say, do you think Justin Verlander thinks of himself as a pitcher first or as a Tiger first? And you get about half the class that would say Tiger, half the class would say pitcher. The actual reality is that he thinks himself as a pitcher first, because there's a very good chance that he's probably not going to end his career with the Tigers. And every time that he gets a ball in his hands, you know, even though times that he's not getting paid for it, you know, weekends or evenings or in the off time, you know, most people say, well, I'm not going to work, you know, after 5 o'clock because they're not paying for me. I'm not coming in on Saturday. I'm not coming in on Sunday. I'm not going back to college and getting another degree. Because the perception is that in some way, shape, or form, that if you, you know, are there past 5 o'clock and you're on salary, that in some way, shape, or form, that your employer is taking, you know, gets a benefit. You know, you have a loss, he has the gain. That's not the case at all. That would be much like, you know, if the new manager for the Tigers came in and said, you know, Justin, you're a great pitcher, but you're a little weak in center field, so why don't you go out there and I'll hit you some balls. He would never do that, ever. You know,
That's the idea, right.
Is every time that guy has a baseball in his hand, he's throwing pitches. That's it. His whole world's consumed. Now, because he thinks himself as a pitcher first and is selfish with his time and energy, his goal is to make himself the best possible pitcher. Therefore, by de facto, the rising tide raises all ships. If he's a better pitcher, by de facto, the Tigers are a better team. Even though ultimately his focus was very narcissistic and very internally motivated to be a better pitcher. That same level of motivation.
That's where I have to cut you there, only because we've got the tyranny of time here. In the next 30 seconds, tell us if we want to get in touch with you, where can we find you, what's the best ways to follow up with you. I'm sure you've started a lot of thoughts for current clients or prospects or people
Absolutely.
Who just want some more information.
Well, certainly you can reach me always by telephone. My telephone number is area code 248-497-5869. They're also able to reach out to me by email, which is donzavis@comcast.net, which is D-O-N, Z as in zebra, A as in apple, V as in victory, I as in igloo, S as in Sam. They're also encouraged to reach out to me on LinkedIn under Don Zavis or certainly find me on Facebook. At Don Zavis as well.
Well, you know, I knew this was going to be a fast hour, and it proved to be right. There's only one thing left for me to say on this call, and that's Don Zavis, you are back, Dean's List.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. And, you know, geez, time just so flies, especially when you've got somebody with so much wisdom and knowledge as Don. So, if you're looking to move forward in your sales marketing career, or if you're a professional who needs that part of your game, you're skilled in your area of expertise, time spent with Don is always time well spent. And that's where we're going to have to leave it today. I'm your host, Dean Lazar. Thanks for eavesdropping on the Dean's List, the podcast that celebrates the art of conversation. Until next time, it's been this time. We look forward to talking with you real soon.